Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck at the Kansas City end of the virtual kitchen table. And it's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton coming to you from the Durham, North Carolina part of the kitchen table. And it's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is the Reverend Doc Bill Holton, also at the Durham end of the kitchen table. And it's very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of a online Zoom Unity Ministry. And our name is the Unity Center for UniversalProsperity.org. And we spell universal, Y-O universal, because it's about your growth and spiritual growth as well.
Yes, it's all about you, and we want to help you. So we invite you to come to ucfyp.org.
Wow. Yes, and I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where I have my Absolute Word, which is my weekly blog, as well as my calendar, where I'm appearing, whether it's Zoom or live. And in our preparation today, folks, we learned that the virtual kitchen table has a hole in the middle of it. And that hole is the rabbit hole we sometimes go down when we're having a program.
And it's fun.
Yeah. So today we're doing part four, which is our last part, on an article called Scholars Found Another Version of Genesis. And we've been having a lot of fun with that. And it's originally published in Belover, and it was written by John Poletti. So Cher, do you want to take it away?
Sure. We thought we would pick up where maybe picking up a little bit of what we ended with at our last show, just to get the transition here. And it is called the Genesis Apocryphon. And just as a reminder, Apocryphon means secret writing, and it's a Greek term for a genre of Jewish and early Christian writings that were meant to impart secret teachings that could not be publicly taught. So that's why, where the name came from, the Apocryphon. And this is a whole nother version of Genesis that focuses more on women.
Yeah.
And the powerful role that women play. So
yes,
we obviously like this. I obviously like this.
Well, it's what piqued my interest in this.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Because, and it's told in narrative form, like different characters that we're familiar with are giving various narrations, but they're all focused on the women and the role that these women played, which was very important and very often underrated in the traditional version.
Yep. And your male counterparts here, Paul and I, are also just as enamored with this because we like the truth. Mm-hmm. We search for the truth. And the truth is, this was another rendition of the Genesis gospel.
That's right. And you guys are so also so respectful of women. And
yes,
it's nice, very nice to have.
Yes.
So the question comes up of what would a whole Genesis reading look like, which to me is sort of like saying if we combined the traditional, which came from a scroll also, I guess, and this Apocryphon, if we put them together, then we'd see the whole picture. And that's sort of what this is saying.
I actually, in doing a little research this morning, found an interesting detail. And that is the dating of these Dead Sea Scrolls comes before the actual Hebrew Bible was canonized.
Right.
And so this predates the final version, we could say, of the Hebrew Bible.
So that's what they were looking at in determining things that went in and didn't go in
right
from the very beginning. So this piece could have even been a piece they had at the time that they chose not to include.
Exactly.
And now it's coming to the surface.
Yeah.
And that's been proven because, as Paul mentioned, it's been carbon dated, so we know it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in this introduction we're giving you, it says, but a few details come into focus. The angels had sex with human women, and that was a surprise to me. That produced giants, and of course, there's been rumors of giants in the earth forever. It also produced another problem. Human males are unwanted. only women are valued, and I would say unwanted by the angels.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And if you think about the story of David and Goliath, I mean, nobody has trouble believing that story who, from a traditional perspective, but that's all about the giants. I mean, he was considered, quote, a giant, and people think he just means he was a tall man. But if we really believe this and some other places in the Bible, it does talk about giants.
It does. Well, yeah. The Nephilim is what they were called.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, yes. So one woman did not allow that, and that was Sarah. And she's a key figure anyway in the Bible, but in the Apocryphon, evidently, she comes out even stronger. And from what this says, Sarah, quote, clings to Abraham, which means she does not let him go. In the plot of the Genesis Apocryphon, she leverages her extraordinary beauty to save his life.
That is a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. Because he, you know, the value he plays in the rest of the story. And so it's so important that he, while this, according to this, the human males were unwanted, she saved him, and then he was available to become what he, fulfill his role that he
his had. Destiny.
Yeah, destiny. Good work. That's the word. That's the word. Okay, but it says this might be implicit in canonical Genesis, but explicit in the Genesis Apocryphon, where Abraham actually says to Sarah, quote, I will live under your protection and my life will be spared because of you.
Wow. And now we know why this wasn't included in the canonical version of the Hebrew scriptures.
Oh, because that goes against everything that they teach about men take care of women and women are owned and you know, don't have that power. So she acts to save him as God then, quote, God then acts to save them both.
Yeah, but where was God up until then?
It's the question. That's the question. That's always the question when that kind of belief. Yes.
So to Christianity, Sarah was just a subservient woman. There she is, after all, in 1 Peter 3:6, Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her Lord. But this translation is suspect, right?
Right.
And so the author suggests, was this another Christian mistranslation? The word obeyed means to listen, and the word Lord is just the term for husband. Sarah had recognized Abraham as her husband and listened to him as God in Genesis 21:12 reminds Abraham, listen to whatever Sarah tells you. Yeah. Well, I am surprised that scripture isn't highlighted, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And of course, what the conventional gospel of Genesis, the one that was accepted and handed down, you can't read this and not recognize of the misogynistic tone to the Christian writings, even from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the conclusion to this article is they learned to listen to each other. And so as male and female, the full human, they become the representative of God on earth. I don't know if I agree with that conclusion, but then listeners, you're probably not surprised at that. So Cher and Bill, do you have any final comments on this before we do our next little piece?
I would say the main thing, the main takeaway is recognizing the power, because we take it deeper, of course, and recognize the feminine nature, the masculine nature that we all have within each of us. We all have that power, and knowing how we have to bring those together for the full representation of who we really are. And so this is a story that is a metaphor for what's happening within us.
Yes.
And to extend the analogy, I'm looking at it as the synchronization of the left brain and right brain hemispheres.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I really like that. Wow. So what we want to do now is just look at a few things about the Dead Sea Scrolls. We probably should have done this first, but here we are catching up. So this is about some things that maybe you don't know about the Dead Sea Scrolls. And when we reviewed these this morning, there's some we knew and some we didn't know. Mm-hmm. So let's dive into this. The first one, teenage shepherds accidentally stumbled upon the first set of Dead Sea Scrolls. That one I knew. Did you guys know that?
We did know that. I heard. Yes. Yeah. But it's really interesting because you never know. Again, if we could go meta spiritually for a minute and just take that whole awareness, how much is there that we know that we don't know? And it's by accident we find out, quote, accident, you know? Yeah. It's just taking it a little deeper to have a little fun with that. Because they were playing, I think, weren't they?
Yeah, it says one of the young shepherds tossed a rock into an opening in the side of a cliff and was surprised to hear a shattering sound. Yeah. So they, what?
How do you break a window before windows were invented?
Right. And he and his companions later entered the cave and found a collection of large clay jars, seven of which contained leather and papyrus scrolls. I mean, wow, was that a eureka moment for them, right? No,
that's so powerful. And I love that they didn't ruin them, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
As kids, you never know what could have happened.
So then the second thing you may not have known, and boy, this one really sort of blew up my consciousness. Some of the Dead Sea Scrolls were sold in the classifieds section. What?
That surprises me. Yeah. What does it say more about that?
So yeah, it says I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. A Syrian Orthodox Archbishop of Jerusalem bought four of the original Dead Sea Scrolls from a cobbler who dabbled in antiquities. Isn't that interesting? Paying less than $100.
Wow.
When the Arab-Israeli war broke out in 1948, Samuel, this guy, traveled to the United States and unsuccessfully offered them to a number of universities, including Yale.
Wow.
Finally, in 1954, he placed an advertisement in the Wall Street Journal under the category of miscellaneous items for sale that read, biblical manuscripts dating back to at least 200 BC are for sale. This would be an ideal gift to an educational or religious institution by an individual or group. Israeli archaeologist Yadin, whose father had obtained the other three scrolls from the initial collection in 1947, secretly negotiated their purchase on behalf of the newly established State of Israel. Unfortunately for Samuel, much of the $250,000 he received went to the U.S. Internal Revenue Service since the bill of sale had not been properly drawn up. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's so hilarious.
What a surprise.
I never heard that story.
Yeah, so that was a curse, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a
demonstration of people don't recognize the value of something very often. It's right here. It's available. Reminds me of the gold that was found on the property. Mm-hmm. You know,
I have a personal story about that. Uh-huh. And that is when I was still Dean of Spiritual Education in Richmond, someone reached out to me from the group that represented the writings of Eric Butterworth. Uh-huh. And this woman was complaining they offered it to the Uni Archives or someone higher up, and they refused them.
Wow.
And so I was able to intervene and tell these people who didn't even understand who Eric Butterworth was, the importance of these documents. And they got transferred to the Uni Archives with something like a $500,000 endowment.
Isn't that
something? Wow.
Yeah, it was a pretty big deal. Okay, let's make sure we get through these. The third one is nobody knows for sure who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. Okay, so my assumption there was that the people who lived in Qumran, a settlement that was located nearby. But apparently, we really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of the Hebrew Bible is represented in the Dead Sea Scrolls. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
There's one detail And that was, the book of Esther is not found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And isn't it interesting that a book written by a woman,
yes,
was not found?
Wonder, does it not? Mm-hmm. Was it destroyed back in the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Hebrew is not the only language of the Dead Sea Scrolls. I assume that. So this is like questioning your unquestioned answers. Mm-hmm. So the majority of Dead Sea Scrolls are in Hebrew, with some fragments written in the ancient Paleo-Hebrew alphabet, thought to have fallen out of use in the 5th century BC.
Wow.
But others are in Aramaic, the language spoken by many Jews, including most likely Jesus, between the 6th century BC and the siege of Jerusalem in AD 70. In addition, several texts feature translations of the Hebrew Bible into the Greek, which some Jews used instead of or in addition to Hebrew at the time of the scroll's creation. Now, that may be dry to some people, but I find that fascinating.
Yeah. I didn't know Aramaic. I knew a lot of it was Aramaic, but I didn't realize all the others as well.
And I heard rumor that they also found some text messages of unknown origin. I'm just kidding.
Oh, from those aliens we talked about last week.
Evidently.
Okay, I have one more. The Dead Sea Scrolls include a guide to hidden treasure. Now, the important detail in this is it was the only one that was written on a copper scroll, so it would last longer. Well, yeah. And you can know that the treasure hunters, when they got a hold of this, they checked and they never found any treasure. But isn't that interesting? I never knew one was on a copper scroll. Mm-mm. Wow. Mm-mm. So the scroll describes 64 underground hiding places around Israel that purportedly contain riches stashed for safekeeping. None of these hoards have been discovered.
Oh, wow.
Like,
what?
Interesting.
Very, very interesting.
I wonder if they represent inner knowledge, you know?
Yeah, it could be. It very well could be.
Code somehow. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's time for us to pivot to the Absolute Word, which is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. This comes from May 28th, 2023, and it's on comfort because of Memorial Day. Mm. And this is one I didn't have to tweak very much. Mm. So the affirmation is, I find comfort in loving memories. And isn't that the truth? Mm-hmm. I think we all find comfort in our memories.
Yes.
There may be days or even weeks on a calendar when I find myself mysteriously feeling melancholy or blue, only to realize the anniversary of someone or something I have loved and lost is approaching. Even when I don't realize it outright, a part of me remembers and responds. As I honor my feelings, I honor the people and places that have helped me evolve, from whom I've learned. Welcoming my feelings brings deep and abiding comfort. I carry those people and places I love in my mind, heart, and the things I do. I keep their memory alive in me. Gradually, I find smiles within the sadness. Revisiting treasured memories reveals the love within the loss. The awareness my divinity is found within each moment. I find comfort through my grateful heart. I find comfort in loving memories. And so it is. And this is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off, saying thank you for listening.
And this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton saying we really appreciate all of you.
And this is the Reverend Doc Bill Holton. And the three of us invite you to always find comfort in loving memories of loved ones.